You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV.
Hey there, Ruby fans, Ruby super fans! Welcome to the very first Ruby After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. We're so excited to cover this show. It's an internet phenomenon. We're here talking about season one in its entirety before season two begins. I'm Matt Lieberman. Joining me all season long, fantastic panelist Patrick Dees is here.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be here again. It's good to be podcasting with you again,
I know.
Sir.
It's a pleasure
it's
to see
far
you again.
Too long.
And our resident Ruby superfan and historian. If I can go so far, Katie Cullen is here.
You may go there. Salutations.
Yes. And we have two very, very special guests with us here via Skype. Carrie Shawcross and
Miles Luna.
Miles Luna, welcome.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are thrilled to have you.
Now, I'm just so that everybody knows, I'm very new to the show, but I was incredibly impressed with everything that I've seen. I'm really, really excited to see and hear how you're going to expand it into season two. So we're going to talk about season one in broad strokes and really get into these characters and the world. And then we're going to talk about season two. We're going to get into some fan tweets. And folks, if you're watching us live on AfterBuzzTV.com, feel free to hit us up on the chat roll on the website, or you can hit us up on Twitter. We'll give out our Twitter handles now, I think is probably apropos. You can reach me at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman.
Yes, sir. You can find me at P to the D's. That's P to the D-E-E-S.
And you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Kiaxet. That's K-I-A-X-E-T.
Okay.
And I am all over the chat roll, guys, too. So I'm on it. So
he's awesome. On it.
Yeah,
we'll pull him as we go.
Be part of this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, tag me on Tumblr and I will watch that feed.
Okay, and we got hashtag too spooky. What was that?
That was fast.
I don't even.
Seriously, we're starting that already.
We're having fun. So
my joke.
Yeah, okay.
So nothing to do with movie.
Carrie, Miles, can you tell us a little bit about how this show got started? Like, what was the first conversation you were involved with? How did it wind up getting from those conversations to the show that we know and love?
I believe it started with you, Kieran.
For me, it was, let's say 6 a.m. on a Monday morning while working on RVB Season 10. I would stagger into the kitchen looking for caffeine, and I'd walk by Monty's desk, Monty Ohm, and he'd be like, "Hey, I'm working on something." And I'd be like, "That's cool." And I'd, keep walking. And then, next week, he'd be like, "It's like this anime thing." I'm like, "That sounds really cool. We should do something like that." He's like, "Yeah." And then, I would keep walking. And then, next week, he'd be like, "You want to help me with it?" I was like, "Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I do. Let's do this." And it just kind of, went from there. It was a lot of, "Hey, we're working long hours on visual effects for RVB. We need something creative to work on the side. So let's make this thing." We can swear, right? We can swear. And then that's when we started talking to you.
Yeah.
I remember my earliest memory of Ruby Talks.
I remember.
The war. My earliest Ruby memory is I was working when we were at our old office. I was upstairs by my lonesome working on Red vs. Blue Machinima while all the animators were down in our studio. And every now and then I'd walk down and I'd see Monty working on some crazy scythe thing. And I'm like, "I don't know what the hell that's all about, but I'm digging it." And then one day, we all wanted to go out and get lunch, and Monty and Carrie, approached.
And they're like, "Hey," we had our robes on, and, a tome.
Pulled up in a van and threw him in the and drove off.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more like, "Hey, we're going to go to Texas Land and Cattle and get some steak. You want to come?" And I was like, "Yeah!"
And then they drop a steak in front of you, and as soon as you took a bite, it's like, "That's payment for working on this first season, pal." Listen.
Enjoy it.
This is the blood pact. You've signed it.
Yeah, you've signed it in cow's blood. Delicious cow's blood.
It was a bunch of
Yeah, sure, cow's blood.
It was like, Little Red Riding Hood, Fairy Tale Influence, team names, color names, there's a world and it's crazy. Did I mention Sniper Scythe? And I was like, whoa. I'm dealing with some red and blue space marines right now. That sounds really, really cool. Get back to me on that. And they worked on developing some stuff. And then
at the beginning, it was just a lot of like, here's an idea. Here's another idea.
Yeah.
Here's another idea that breaks the first two ideas. So, but that one's cooler. So let's do that instead.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of just like,
what do we like? What do we think is the coolest? Like, all of us will just keep throwing in ideas. Like, what if we go this way with it? What if we go that way with it? Mm-hmm. And eventually the three of us all decided on a few set rules and characters and story ideas that we wanted to stick to. And then at one point we all kind of decided, okay, Monty's working on like, action and like the design and the look of the show, and he kind of had us go off and start writing the first episode.
Yeah,
and the idea was he was going to show Matt and Bernie, the owners and founders of Rooster Teeth. He was going to show them the first trailer that he made, and then we were going to back it up with the script. And essentially, we were just going to go.
Right. And apparently, that strategy worked out pretty well for everyone involved. Yeah. So getting into sort of the scripting of this first season, we spend a lot of time getting to know our main characters, forming Team Ruby, getting over some initial stumbling blocks in terms of getting to know each other, and then sort of getting into, or just barely peeling back the mythology of the Faunus and the White Fang. Now, one of the tweets that I got, and I... Let me see who sent it to me. Was about the relationship between hunters and huntresses and the police, and kind of I'm just kind of wondering. Yeah, they're using dust. They have auras. They have these weapons to help kind of fight crime and to stop people from doing bad things. What is their legally? What jurisdiction do they have? Do they have a jurisdiction, or does everyone just accept that they just can?
Well, Cop Joel and Cop Bernie are kind of stunningly useless in this.
I know.
They work very subtly. Okay. Yeah. What appears to be shenanigans and buffoonery, actually very very serious buffoonery. Mm.
Yeah, and I want to give that the credit for that tweet to at Glenjamin Esquire, Glenn Caulfield.
I like it.
All right.
Yeah. Not to give away too much, we are going to one of the things that we're going to do with Volume 2 is answer a bunch of the questions that we didn't have time to answer in the first volume and start developing more on the world and how it works and all these things. So we actually are going to get a little bit into that this season, and I don't think we should give away too much. But
we should give away too much.
Answers are coming.
Give us an AfterBuzz exclusive.
Yeah, just give us an
AfterBuzz exclusive.
Please. They work together on something.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think it's they're definitely respected probably a little bit more
than the police force.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like
huntsmen and huntresses have a little more weight to carry around with that title.
Right, I mean, they come in on the important things.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so would you say that they're effectively elemental SWAT team, perhaps?
This sounds like a great band name.
Yeah.
So, yes.
That's my Nine Inch Nails cover band.
Right? I'd watch a double bill of Nerf Herder and Elemental SWAT Team.
Yes.
100%. Yeah. First in line.
Cool. VIP tickets, front of the pit. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about Team Ruby a little bit. Like, where did you come up with the conception of these characters? What kind of voices did you want in the mix? And since obviously late in the season we learned that that Blake is a Faunus, was that something that you had always intended to put in there to make sure that you have a connection to that side of things, or did that come later?
It's funny how basic everything really started.
Right. The very initial, like the very, very first thing that ever happened was this is how he tells us, is Monty woke up in the middle of the night one night and nobody in the room just said RWBY and then wrote it down and then fell back asleep.
That's how he tells it.
The legend. How that happened. He just RWBY and then like went back to sleep. And he woke up the next morning and was like, RWBY, okay. And then, like, that was kind of, like, what started with that whole, you know, thing I was talking about with him, where he would just be like, okay, RWBY, I think it's going to be, you know, red, white, black, yellow.
Yeah, it was very early on. It was the colors were really important, the look of the show.
Right.
Red, white, black, and yellow all complement each other really, really well.
Sure.
And that was something that he wanted to stick to in terms of just, like, an artistic direction.
Right.
I think the very super basic first talks of the four girls was Little Red Riding Hood. She's a sweetheart. She's kind of wild, little wolfy. We have a pretty princess kind of girl, a ninja girl with cat ears, and like a badass Goldilocks. Mm-hmm. And that was like the initial pitch that he gave to us. He was like, these are our characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And then again, it was just, and then all of us going, okay, no, this, this is a cool start. Where do we go with this?
They seem like they would both get along and comically not get along. Okay,
yeah,
I can see this.
And then from that was kind of the building blocks for everything else. We were like, okay, so we got a girl with cat ears. Okay, well, how do we explain that? Do we want to go in a world where we just don't explain it and whatever? Or do we want to try and give some more meaning behind it? And then that became this whole Faunus White Fang thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had, you know, Weiss, just her design. She looked really, you know, formal and stuff. Okay, well, do we want to make her, is she royalty? Is she a princess? Maybe not a princess. What about an heiress, though? And that's just kind of like based off of.
It's like, what's another way we can make her important without making
her royalty? So design kind of led development, if it will.
The colors led to the designs, led to the character personalities.
Hmm. All right. Do either of you guys have any season one centric questions? I can keep going.
I'm really curious to see. Please,
you go
please,
ahead.
Absolutely. All right.
Mine are all very specific and potentially spoilery. So you first.
So again, I want to preface this comment with, this is absolutely the first anime I've ever seen. So I host a weekly video game podcast, and kind of in a Venn diagram of like interest, there's a lot of overlap. So I was really excited to like kind of dive into this. And what intrigued me was that you have like ostensibly 6-7 minutes to like develop characters like at a shot, right? 6 to 10 minutes. And I want to, how did you go, what was that process as you were going into the writing room and saying, hey, like, how do we share a lot of about the characters? How do we deliver a lot of exposition in almost no time at all?
Yeah, and how then, do we be effective?
And it worked. Like, I mean, you're really endeared to these people really quickly, but like, how did you go into that writing that? It sounds, felt like a challenge.
Here's how we went into that.
Yeah. Okay.
Carrie? Yeah, Miles?
How the fuck are we going to do this?
Excellent. All right.
And we are now rated mature on iTunes.
It was such a short time frame.
Sure.
It was really, really scary.
Yeah.
The first season was super scary because of all the reasons you just mentioned.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't have a lot of time. You really just have to like throw the character at the audience and hope that they don't immediately hate them.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing we did actually is when we were still developing the whole series as a whole, we weren't sure how many episodes we were going to do at first or anything like that. So the first thing Matt asked us to do was to write 6 episodes. And we thought, okay, we'll do 6 episodes. And that took us basically where the first six, we'll say, I guess the first 8 episodes.
Took us all the way up to the Nevermore.
Up to the Nevermore. And we wrote that, and they were like, okay, well, this is good. Just go ahead and do more. So we're like, oh, okay, cool.
That's like the best direction from a boss ever. Just go ahead.
Just keep going. Do that,
but more,
man.
Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Do you have any notes? More. Yeah. More is more good.
Try hard to be good and don't suck.
Yeah, basically.
It sounds like Bernie.
It's a sampler on my wall at home.
Try hard to be good.
Then it kind of turned into this, you know, okay, so we've got this chunk. We're going to add this much more to it. Okay, so we've told it turned into like weird math of story balance versus character development
versus comedy versus
action.
It felt kind of like you did have sort of 3 acts to this season, where you had sort of like everything leading up to the formation of Team Ruby, or like you had the arrival at school, you kind of have the formation of Team Ruby, and then you have sort of becoming this team and having this, you know, discovery of Blake's Faunus heritage and having you sort of this final confrontation.
Yeah, I mean, I think we also, we've learned a lot from just watching RVB over the years and how Bernie and Matt did it, in that we knew that We liked what we wrote for the entire thing. We were happy with that, and we knew that our audience had gotten used to kind of this delivery method of, here's a little bit, all right, here's a little bit more, all right, here's a little bit more. Which, you know, I'm sure they scream at their computers a lot and go like, what? No, I want more of this now.
Right.
Oh,
but,
yes.
I mean, you know, it definitely seems like, you know, that's kind of the, that started the Rooster Teeth way is, you know, it's like, hey, we're going to make a movie, but over time.
Right.
Sure. So I think a little of the pressure came off there, just knowing that it's like, okay, this is an established thing we've done before as a company.
Then going forward with volume two, we kind of learned from volume one that, it doesn't necessarily translate perfectly, like going from this type of show that Red vs. Blue is to the type of show that Ruby is and the type of show that people expected it to be.
Right.
People see an anime and they expect, you know, 22-minute long, full three-act story every episode, and you can't always do that.
Yeah.
So we learned from that, and we busted our asses, and in volume two, we're actually going to have 12 – how many is it?
It's 12-minute episodes.
Yeah, 12-minute episodes. Yeah, minimum 12 minutes per episode. So
okay.
We really, really, really fought to extend the length of every episode to try and get even more character and story and world-building stuff into every episode.
Well, because it's incredibly hard because you've got character, you've got world-building, and then you've also got a commitment to having kick-ass action. So how do you fit it all into six? And I'm lucky enough that I was able to binge watch it. I have to imagine that you faced your fair share of pretty angry comments from people, like especially during the whole forest sequence, which is chopped up into so many pieces. You know, that are just like, what? No, I want what? Stop it! Hey.
We're Rooster Teeth fans. We are well trained to watch 3 to 5 minutes and wait a week.
Large grains of salt came with the comments.
Yeah.
Do you remember any that kept you up at night?
Any choice?
Oh my god! Yeah, there was a few. There's one. Can I talk about the Jean arc? As we call it.
Oh boy! Here we go.
I remember there was one comment that I was just like, "Oh, that was." I thought this show was called Ruby, not Juniper. Man, we're focusing way too much on Jean.
Because
one of the things that we wanted to try and do early on was to show that this wasn't going to be a show that focused solely on Ruby Rose as a character and only on Team Ruby. We wanted to have an ensemble cast. Sometimes we might focus on a teacher or a student in another team. We wanted to have maybe even villains for certain. We wanted to, like, we really wanted everybody to enjoy all of the characters. Mm-hmm. And originally, the way that things got broken up, we didn't realize with weekly releases by doing the Juniper and the Jean and Pierre kind of storyline and Cardin storyline, the way it was broken up, it was like a month of Jean, and then we had like two really, really big weeks of Blake and Team Ruby. But because they were split up differently in terms of like we had the same amount of time for both story arcs, except one was split up over 2 weeks and one was like four, something like that.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, there's way too much Juniper. Mm-hmm. I was like, but technically there's not. I'm sorry.
If you look at the total runtime, you'll find
that. If you look at the numbers we crunched through.
Well, it better be worth it. It better pay off. Come on.
There was one that was like the pebble in my shoe constantly. I was just like, bah.
The comment thing really interests me because, like, if anything about anything Rooster Teeth puts out there, the community is incredibly vocal. They're a very tight-knit group, right? Like, so how has that community influenced the development of Ruby to this point, maybe in season one, and how much of that feedback carries into season two?
It's definitely, with Ruby in particular, the feedback kind of has to immediately apply to the next season.
Right.
Because we're so far ahead in development by the time these episodes are coming out. Which I don't know that everybody realizes a lot of times. It's like, why didn't you read my comic from last week and fix everything in the show for the next week? But there's
we can't all be South Park. We can't all make a show in a week.
It's not Red versus Blue. Yeah.
Exactly.
Ha! Ha! I've just been up for 30 hours.
But it's one of those things where it's like, you have to, every week, you sit there and go like, okay, hey, cool, good comment. Oh, bad comment. Okay, man. Okay, good comment. Okay, oh, bad comment. And then you kind of think about that at the end of the season. We spent a lot of time at the end of the season. Okay, what do people like? What do people not like? Mm-hmm. What do we
still want to do?
What do we still want to do?
Right.
And how is it now going to be different? So, I mean, like, we spent a lot of time in Volume 2 trying to address the thoughts and concerns that people had and still trying to keep the things that they liked in Volume 1.
Right.
Agreed.
I think it's one of the beautiful things about the internet is that you do just get instant feedback. Sure, some of the times that feedback is just really loud caps lock garbage.
Right.
But other times it's really, really sometimes it's really insightful, and sometimes it's just really, really nice to just read like something that you spent hours and hours and days and nights and weekends on.
Someone
says, wow, that was really, really awesome. That totally made my day. And just that one comment, you're like, that made my day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was worth it.
Absolutely.
For 2697.
And you see all of those on Tumblr every day.
Yeah.
you learn, like, okay, I'm in a good mood. I want to stay in a good mood. I'm going to go ahead and stay on Rooster Teeth.
Yeah.
And not read YouTube comments or something. Yeah. You know, it's like, or it's like, oh man, you know, I'm feeling good. I can do this. Let's go. And then you go in and you're like, nah, why did I do this?
This was a mistake.
Well, when you read those all caps locks, like these grammatical like disasters, when you read those, how do you just let that slide off? To a certain extent, you have to like incorporate that feedback, but like also like, okay, like, okay, pump the brakes a little bit. How do you develop that thick skin?
I'm going to tell you a secret right now, okay? Whenever I start reading a comment, as soon as somebody uses just like the letter U or the wrong form of there, I'm like, oh, cool, okay, your opinion doesn't matter. All right, next comment.
You can't read.
Unless it's a good thing,
sure.
When they're just like hitting the keyboard as fast as they can.
Yeah.
Wait.
Miles, Carrie, what if he was saying just letter U are great and you stopped at the letter U and you didn't get to read the R great?
Their opinion doesn't matter.
It's
just statistics.
Yeah.
So, do you ever do the Shannon McCormick Tumblr freak out voice? Has that you ever read a post in that?
Oh my god.
You watch Tumblr a lot more than I do after episodes.
Yeah, so Tumblr is a very emotional place.
Yes.
Yeah,
sometimes it's very negative and weird, and sometimes it's really positive and happy, and sometimes it's really positive and weird.
Yeah.
But my favorite is the all caps, oh, Ruby, my BB, please, no, you cannot do this. Oh, the BBYPLS is like the silliest thing I've ever seen. BB, please. I think that's my favorite like dumb Tumblr thing that I've ever seen. I love it so much.
I want to read another fan tweet from Lupita Martinez at Bubbly Bunny. She writes, "What are some things you would have changed in Volume 1 if you had the chance?"
That's a good question. If we had the time and ability to do it, getting rid of the shadow people would have been cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Main character.
Yeah. It was just something.
It's just a production thing. It's just like, hey, we don't have the time to make a whole bunch of random characters. So
yeah, we looked, and it's because we looked at animes like Soul Eater, which will have just like a gradient background. Like they don't draw every background character a lot of times. It's just like blank people silhouettes. But we just learned from Volume 1 that doesn't carry over as well into a 3D anime trying to look like a 2D anime.
We have this, you know, super colorful environment.
Yeah, exactly.
Real quick, you guys, can you mute the AfterBuzz stream, please?
Mute the AfterBuzz live chat on your end because we're getting like little pops when people bring stuff up.
We can still hear you, I promise.
Yes.
See here.
And we love the chat.
Bum, 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 doo-doo, bum, 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 is you doing filler music, Stephen Lemieux, pretty much engineer?
Was that The Price is Right?
That was The Price is Maybe.
Yeah.
The Price is Maybe, okay.
Now, how much has changed production-wise between seasons 1 and 2, or volumes 1 and 2 of Ruby? This comes from Rubeastly, at Rubeastly on Twitter. Do you have a larger budget? Do you have a larger staff? Did you have more time, perhaps, or less time?
We have about the same amount of time. We started a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. We're doing more, and we're actually doing it with fewer people. It's basically been what worked? It's the same attitude that we took to the script is, okay, what worked? Okay, let's just like keep refining this production and just keep making it better. Honestly, the day to day hasn't changed too much. It's just a lot of, you know, people nose to the grindstone working.
Yeah.
And, you know, every once in a while we'll go and review stuff and, you know, it's a production.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
In terms of your sense of humor, the sense of humor on the show I think is very well defined, and I'm very curious as to what what anime you pull from in terms of injecting it and the way that you inject it. I feel like there's a lot of visual tropes that come right out of different anime, and also maybe just other just comedic influences that you guys have.
There's definitely a straight up reference to Samurai Champloo in there.
Oh yeah,
Which one? Which part are you talking about?
Overall, I don't think it's the thing where it's like we're watching something. It's like, oh, let's do something like that. I think it's just a lot of our. I watch a lot of anime, and my mom watches a good bit too. It's just a lot of like. I think it's just comedic timing kind of comes from that.
Yeah,
than anything else.
Honestly, too. Essentially, the rule that we establish, not like a rule, but something that we just kind of learned, is the writing process for the two of us is essentially we're at one of our apartments. One of us has a laptop. The other one's like either walking around with a sword or something, or rolling on the ground.
Sure, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And essentially, if we say something dumb, but it makes both of us laugh, we're like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
We definitely had – I'm really excited. We really goofed up Ruby a little more this season. Ruby's a little bit more of a young goofball. And she was pretty silly in the first season.
Yeah.
Here's what Wolf Thumb is. We have we usually write about – when we're writing, we do about two episodes a week.
Yeah.
So we'll start the day off a lot of times with reading everything we wrote the day before. And our rule is if it makes us laugh, we keep it in. If it doesn't, then we probably fix it.
Yeah.
Right. What level of notes process do you deal with, both from Bernie and the team at Rooster Teeth and from Monty? Because I feel like he's handling more the visual side and the action side, or at least that's kind of what I'm hearing. How does that collaboration work?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
The first season, the first volume, I remember getting a lot more notes and suggestions from Matt and Bernie because they weren't – this was like nothing that Rooster Teeth had ever done before. And I think they had a little bit of absolutely understandable hesitation when it came to certain things. Like, you were two guys that had never really written a brand new show before and it's going to be like the next big thing. I'd be kind of worried if I was on the other end of that deal. They're not super familiar with anime and the type of show that we were going for. But after they saw that it worked, they were like, oh, cool, you kids just keep doing this thing.
Yeah. definitely the biggest, especially for Matt and Bernie, I feel like the round of notes we get is at the very beginning when we say, okay, here's the outline for the season.
Yeah.
It's like they help us a lot in, you know, crafting what the flow of the season is going to be and, you know, what content is going, what episodes. Does this episode feel too light? Does this episode feel too heavy? Have we distributed the fights evenly? You know, like that kind of stuff.
Really good at pacing.
So, I mean, so basically once we get to that point, we sign off. We're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then we kind of go off. We'll get some notes from them, but yeah, definitely went, you know, there weren't as many this year at that point of it. And then with Monty, it's, you know, he's the one, the three of us work together to kind of get the story of the season. Like, what's going to happen? It's like, this is going to happen this year. This is going to happen this year. Yeah. This is going to happen this year.
Monty will say, like, you know, I really want X and Y.
Yeah.
That would be cool if we had that happen, you know, in the story this season.
So then we'll go off for like a week and be like, okay, here's what we think it is. And then he'll go, this is good, but I want to add this, and I don't like this anymore. We're like, okay. And then we, like, rearrange some stuff. And like, And he's like, yeah. And then we basically just start writing. And every week we'll just send him the drafts, and he'll read them and go, like, oh, this show's really funny. Maybe we should do something like this now. And then we'll incorporate that down the line kind of thing. So it's a lot of – it's just definitely, like, continuously moving process.
Yeah. Sure.
So how many years in advance do you have this plan? Do you have the idea for the entire storyline, or is it –
Do you know where you're going with the whole series? That's actually a good question.
We actually do have from like before we even started writing the first episode, we wanted to plot out like where we wanted this thing to go. And obviously it's open to change and adaptation as we go along. It's like you said, it's a constantly changing beast. But yeah, no joke, we have like years of story kind of planned up, and we definitely have ideas for where the volumes are going to take us.
Yeah, it's important to us to have this pacing not only through the season but throughout the entire series. So it's more than just something. It's like, hey, we want it to be here later. So like, let's strive toward that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the shows that your series reminds me of, and this is 100% a compliment, is obviously it's going to draw comparisons to Avatar The Last Airbender The Legend of Korra. Yeah. And what I really appreciate about those shows are that they matured with their audience, the same way that, say, you know, the Harry Potter series matured with its audience.
Yeah.
Is that kind of very much on the forefront of your mind in developing these years of story? Is it going to get darker, or does it have a relatively similar tone throughout?
I'd say that, yeah, the show will mature along with the audience, and also just that's kind of, you know, that's the three-act structure. As the story goes on, things become more precarious, the stakes get higher, everything becomes more and more dangerous, high risk, high reward kind of stuff. That's kind of just the nature of storytelling. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as the years go on, things will get dicey.
They're dicey already.
Well, I'm curious to see you guys, like, so during the writing process, I mean, you guys are two guys, how is it, and you're writing for largely a female cast, has it been a challenge to write, like, empowered, strong women, and because I feel like it's resonated with both genders. I'm just curious to see what your experience has been as guys writing for women.
All right, so I'm going to be real.
Break it down.
Please be real.
I want some truth bombs.
Please be real.
Wow, you guys are like, yeah, pro ladies, woo, that's awesome, equality. And I'm sitting here like, we're just writing a story about kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's like, I don't know. Like, I don't really think of them.
I don't know that it's, like, in our mind when we're writing this. I don't think we're ever like, yeah, they're women. Like we're not thinking, like, hey, they're these strong characters doing these things. We're just like, hey, they're these kids. They're put in a situation.
Yeah, more than anything, we just see them as, like, yeah, kids in an outlandish situation.
Yeah.
Okay. People. They're people.
Which I think makes it look like we're not trying too hard. So I guess that's part of it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, there definitely was no, like, agenda.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sorry,
sure.
Ladies. We weren't intentionally looking out for you. We just kind of thought these four girls
But you've managed to accomplish it anyway, and do we ever appreciate it?
Yeah, I feel like you nailed it. I think you guys avoided, maybe that's just too, like, that you're writing kids, but, like, you avoided what I would relate to be, like, a typical anime trope of, like, just over-sexualization of the lady characters. I felt like they were, like, empowered and effeminate, but, again, what not over-sexualized anyway. So I feel like not only they resonate, but you dodged that bullet, if you will.
Thanks, yeah. And I mean, and that's not to say that, like, one thing that does, like, I'd agree that, like, there's some shows that, like, definitely over-sexualize female characters, but that's also not to say that, like, a character can't be sexy. I don't think anybody's going to disagree that Yang's a sexy character.
Yang is very cleavage. It's not lost. It's okay to be sexy.
Glinda Goodwitch.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude, Glinda Goodwitch got a different kind of sexy going on.
Yeah, she does.
She knows how to rock it. She know what she do.
And it's Kathleen behind the mic for that one, so. Yeah.
I'm going to ask another Twitter question that hopefully you can answer for us. It's a season one into season two question from Daniel Stewart at Cumneth. How much time passed during volume one, and how much time has passed between volume one and volume two? Is there any kind of break between them, or are we picking up right where we left off? I feel like people are going to know.
Essentially, we have the first volume takes place during the first semester of school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's been, I think it's been week, month. The volume two kicks off the second semester.
Yeah.
I think we throw dates in there somewhere.
So, yeah, I think the first episode has, like, it's been
weeks and something or another. There's a line.
Yeah. It's been about, like, the in between of a semester.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
Okay.
They went on vacation for a little bit, maybe. I don't know.
Also 2 years.
Also 2 years.
Okay, is this One Piece? My own questions.
Oh, yeah,
and
go for it.
I just kind of want to drop a few plot elements here that we've seen earlier in the
just
season.
Just know we will not answer spoilery questions.
I know. And this is also for the viewers. I want to bring a few things up. Ozpin pointed out the color of Ruby's eyes. One of the first things he said on meeting her, you have silver eyes. This is a world based on color. We don't know who Yang was looking for in her trailer. We don't know who that gravestone was. And we have very little backstory for Pyrrha, Nora, Ren. Are you planning on addressing any of this in the upcoming season? Is this part of a longer game that we'll need to wait for?
little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because I feel like, yeah, that's a lot of stuff. Yeah. So some of it we maybe will see in Volume 2. Some of it, you know, maybe are just smaller details or things that may get addressed later on.
Well, the trailer did hint at Kira's story a little.
We're big fans of setting up stuff and doing kind of like longer plays, which I know a lot of people hate, but I feel like it just pays off a lot more. It's a lot of it too is just like, hey, let's sprinkle this in here and maybe we'll come back to it later, maybe we won't, but we probably will because we want to.
Yeah.
Well, right. And we
that is one of the hardest things is having to say we can't tell that particular story just yet, but maybe next volume.
I feel comfortable saying this. All of the things that you brought up, they're there for a reason.
All right. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be an ounce of fat on any episode, so I'm sure they are.
Fat's all on us.
All on us. Well, so guys, break it down for me. Like, one of my favorite things about it, to Matt's point, was the fights. Like, man, I thought the fights were just pure badassery. So break down, like, how does that fight choreography come about? How do you design those fights? How much of that's, like, mocap versus animated? I'm interested to hear how they came about, because I thought it was really strong throughout the entire season.
Dude, save that for Monty next week.
You gotta pay it for it, man. It goes to Mr. Monty for one of those fights. There was a few moments in Volume 1, like, where Carrie and I would kind of come up with, like, the basic blueprint. Literally, we drew out a really goofy, like, blueprint-looking plan on how the teams fought the monsters in the forest in Volume 1. Yeah. And essentially, Monty was like, I like this, this, and this, and I'm going to change it and add a little bit of this.
And also, they're over here now.
Yeah. And then he was like, good job. I'm going to go play with these things now. Yeah. And then he made something.
Thank you for these toys. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you for these toys. I'm going to go play with them.
Just to cover like our part of it, it's basically we will, you know, we're writing the script and we're like, okay, a fight's going here. We'll kind of give them like an endpoint that's like, all right, you've got these characters, they're in this setting. And then we'll give them an out point. It's like, okay, these characters feel this way at the end. This person won. Go.
And he goes.
Yeah, he does.
Absolutely. This is just kind of a fun question from @Spoofopolis. Will we ever get a video with all of Shane's takes of That's a Big Ursa?
I hope so.
Oh my god, we have it. We actually, I mean, it's in the intro. I don't think it's a big deal. We're recording some efforts for Shane's character in Russell. Oh boy.
I haven't heard all of those.
That was fantastic.
I haven't heard those yet. I've been in Red versus Blue Land.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
I love Shane Newfield.
Shane is incredible. He's like one of the funniest, quietest people you'll ever meet in your entire life. And you never know just by meeting him.
Yeah, and we're already working on the hidden Easter egg videos for this year. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Sponsor cuts?
From the DVD.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Oh, so there will be a DVD of Volume 1 or Volume 2?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
DVD Blu-ray just like last year.
Yeah.
In stores or something at some point in time.
That's a plug.
Fantastic.
I like it.
I'm going to ask another fan question. Hannah at Hey Impecky asks, what is your favorite character to write for? Do you have a favorite character to write for?
Oh, man. This is, I think, my favorite problem to have.
Yeah.
Is when we were coming up with a lot of the characters and their personalities, we'd be writing for Yang for a while, and we'd both just be like, dude, Yang is the best. Yeah. And then we'd write for Ren and Nor for a little while, and we're like, these two are just top.
Yeah.
And it's nice not being – it's such a mom and dad answer, but it's so hard to pick a favorite out of all of our little ladies.
Sure.
God, man. I think the easiest, personally, for me to write for is Jean, just because Jean is in essence, just like – a heightened version of my middle school self.
Sure.
I just kind of like.
It's Did you cheat your way into like. Middle school? Did you lie to get into middle school?
Yes. I actually lied to get in here.
I was wondering where you're going with this.
I have no idea what Red versus Blue is.
Who are you?
I'm you.
Well, for not having any idea, you certainly write it well.
Yeah.
Answer and just say Ruby. I think this year, just because it's really fun.
Ruby was super fun to write this year. She's just a goofball this volume.
Wonderful.
So, flip side of that, what's been really difficult to write? Is there a character where it's difficult to get into that headspace? Has there been a scene or an arc where you just keep throwing it down on the desk and going, "What do I do with this?"
I think for me, it would either be Weiss or Blake.
Yeah.
Weiss or Blake, especially in Volume 1, had some of the more dramatic scenes, and it's really hard. It was really hard finding Blake's voice, because at first we wanted her to be very apathetic and disinterested in a lot of things, but then the character came across as kind of flat and boring, so then we had to, like, we made her a little sassy and more cynical and sarcastic, and that helped a little bit. But I remember writing for Blake early on was really tough, and it was also tough on Erin trying to find the voice when we didn't exactly know what her voice was at the very start of all of this. But we all kind of put our heads together and came up with something that we really liked. I think Weiss and Blake are the more difficult ones, because they definitely have a lot more baggage carrying. Well, from what we've seen out of Team Ruby, they've got a lot of they've
opened their bags first.
Yeah, they opened their bags first. Yeah.
Well, they're unpacking. They're less fun, like, right off the bat. They're just less fun, and you can tell, because, like, that's the thing. Nora and Yang are my favorite characters, too, and I feel like it's because you can tell you guys are having fun writing them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, the characters that are just zany and woo, absolutely, it's just like, yeah, it's like a hyperactive puppy, it's great.
Yeah.
When you gotta get into some heavy plot stuff, you got to take more time and make sure, is this sounding a little too melodramatic? Is this getting the point across? Is she still who she is at her core?
Yeah, I feel like those are probably the scenes that we'll work on the most,
right? Yeah.
Well, and it seems like Weiss and Blake are deeper characters, whereas Ruby and Yang are broader characters that more hold things together.
In Volume 1, that is kind of how we set them up. But one thing that I think is fun to do is introduce a character that you think you understand or you know, like, that character trope, and then to break it.
Yeah.
Not to keep tooting the Jean horn, but no, that was one thing that was really fun to do with Jean, was showing, oh, we have the lovable idiot guy. And then a few episodes in, he's aware that he's the lovable idiot, and he hates being the lovable idiot.
Sure.
Same thing with Yang. Oh, she's a busty party girl. She's also, like, a really, really loving and nurturing sister. Like, we had these characters that you think you understand right off the bat, but then the more you get to know them, you realize, oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent, too, you know, we also treated this as, you know, real people. It's, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit longer for people to open up.
Oh, who's home?
What's that, Barbara?
These doors are opening everywhere, man.
I have another Twitter question. Now, Katie, you had said to me that the trailers, that we had to watch the trailers because the trailers are canon.
Yes.
And someone's asking, do the trailers have a part in the story? And if so, where in the timeline are they? Can you explain this point to me? Because I don't get how they're canon. They don't have any connection to the events. Do they?
They absolutely are canon, and you will learn about them as the story unfolds.
Laying the smackdown.
Okay.
Blake's trailer, the black trailer, explains the story behind Weiss's comment when she's yelling about how abused she is. Explains her comment about an entire cargo train stolen.
Right.
That's what happened in that trailer. We see Yang looking for someone, and we see Junior and the two other girls that she fights show up in the season 2 opening. And the best I can figure, we see Weiss's backstory and how she got that scar over her eye. Ruby, we still have a ton of unanswered questions.
Yeah, no, do you have anything to add?
I feel like she's got those scars.
She's knocking them out.
No, she's doing great
She's doing pretty good.
She'll be working at Rooster Teeth next week.
I don't know about that. Yeah. That's hard to do.
We'll talk about that off the air.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
No.
Talk to me a little bit about kind of the voiceover casting, right? Like, so when you're writing, do you have, like, a particular person in mind? Or, you know, once you've written a character and people are coming to audition for that, like, what are you looking for? What's that magic moment where you find a voice to fit with this person that you've written? Like, what does all that look like?
For a lot of the initial characters, we kind of already had them in mind just based on who they were and, like, what we knew they could do with their voice. Lindsay definitely surprised all of us.
Oh, my God. She was
no idea she was going to go for what she did, and she totally nailed it right out of the gate. I mean, as much as we can, we always try to think, it's like, even if it doesn't end up working out, it's like, okay, we're writing for this character now. We think it's going to be played by this character. Let's write to them a little bit, you know, there's no reason not to, you know, include a little bit of their personality into it.
Play to their strengths a bit when it comes to dialogue and the phrasing and the mannerisms.
That definitely worked for, or that definitely happened for Team Ruby.
Okay. Fantastic. This is a season 2 question. Are we going to learn more about Yang and Ruby's family and their past together. Like, they're sisters, but we haven't really seen more than just the fact that they do have this bond.
Right.
And that gravestone in the red trailer.
Hmm.
Question mark?
Maybe. Yeah. That's something that we will definitely be exploring down the line. Does it happen this season? Does it happen another season? Or are you just going to have to tune in to find out? RoosterTeeth.com!
Oh, believe me, we will be.
Thursdays, Ruby Thursday.
Expert salesman right there.
Continuing on with the season two questions, Carrie, I saw that you're voicing Neptune, yes?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the voice you chose, a little bit about the character that may not be spoilers? Did you do any work off of Michael trying to find the voice? Anything like that?
It was a lot of me being self-conscious. So, like, Miles and I going in the conference room and just him helping me, like, try and find something that worked, and then going to the booth. We actually, for the first two episodes at least, we had written all the dialogue for Neptune, and I was trying to record it, and we're like, none of this feels right anymore, so we actually just rewrote every single one of his lines, basically just in the booth as we went, just because it was like, oh, this actually sounds better to say here, so let's just say this instead. It was kind of what you do for, you have kind of like a Jean pass that you do, where it's like, we'll write something, and it's like, either you'll kind of finish the final phrasing, or it's like, we'll tweak in the booth a little bit. We found that I do that now, too,
with Neptune,
a little bit.
Yeah.
No, it was a lot of just trial and error, actually.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything particularly interesting from that. I don't know, really.
He's got blue hair! Whoa!
He's on Team Hot Men.
I really like Neptune. Even with the glimpses we'll get to see of him this season.
And Michael and I hang out a lot, too, so it worked out.
All right. Fantastic. Now, unfortunately, we do only have a couple more minutes left, so I think we have time for maybe one more question. Katie, Patrick, anything?
I've got a question. Go ahead.
Come on. Patrick,
ridiculous inside joke question. It looks like Neptune has a gun. The gun that turns into a gun.
And the chat is saying it looks awesome.
It does. It looks amazing.
Looks can be deceiving.
Good. I'm looking forward to it.
My question quickly was around the weapons. It was one of my favorite things, the weapon design. Do you have any that you just threw out that was like pretty rad, some design that you were gonna use at some point that just didn't make the final cut that you just kind of wish was still around?
There was a weapon that I can't remember if we came up with it.
Did we
come up with one for Volume 1 that we didn't get to see in Volume 1, but we might get to see in Volume 2, and I'm so excited.
Fingers crossed.
The beauty of this show, too, is especially because we know there's going to be, like, there are so many characters now and there's going to be so many later. If we have an idea for something, it's like, oh, it doesn't really work for this character we're doing. All right, well, we'll just hold on to it. It's going to get used.
Fantastic.
Aww. Will we see Ozpin's weapon? There are so many theories around that cane.
We'll see.
All right. I want to thank you both for joining us. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thanks.
We're all so excited for the premiere of Ruby this Thursday. Thursday, what time?
This Thursday, I'm hoping I get all these right. It's going to be 5 o'clock for our sponsors, and then 7 o'clock for everybody. We're going to have... that may or may not be the time going forward. We'll see, but definitely this Thursday, that's the time. Also, this weekend, you can see Aaron and Kara at
San Diego Comic Con.
SDCC, as it is also sometimes referred to.
Blake and Weiss, go see him.
Okay,
we actually have a fourth host who was not able to be with us today, Megan Salinas. She will be interviewing them at Comic Con.
Awesome!
Yeah. Do you guys have Twitter handles you want to just shout out real quick before you get off the phone?
Yeah, sure. I'm at Carrie Shawcross, at KerrySHAWCROSS.
And I am at Miles Luna 24.
Okay. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Hopefully we'll be talking to you again before the end of the season.
Thank you for having us.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Anytime.
Thanks, guys. All right. So before we wrap up here, they were fantastic.
They are wonderful people.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I just want to remind folks at home, anyone who's watching us on YouTube, that a great way to support the show, if you like what we're doing here, obviously we're going to be reading your YouTube comments and interacting with you down there in the comment section. But another great way to support this show and to support all the shows here at AfterBuzz TV, if this is your first time here, is to go to iTunes, rate and review the show and any other shows that you listen to or that you watch. It's the best way for us to attract sponsors and guests to our variety of shows. We put out between 60 and 70 hours of free after show content a week.
True story.
And we are going to be here. We're going to be doing this season, we're going to be doing it a little differently from some of our other shows. We're going to be doing it bi-weekly, every 2 weeks, talking about two episodes at a time with special guests all season long.
You don't want to miss it.
You don't want to miss one episode.
So our next show is on the 31st, I believe.
Yes, on the 31st.
7 p.m. Pacific time, and we will have Monty Ohm as a Skype guest.
Yes, creator Monty Ohm. So feel free to tweet at us, tweet your questions with the hashtag RubyAfterBuzz. Is that AfterBuzzRuby?
RubyABTV.
Yeah,
Alphabet
soup. Yeah.
There you go.
Hashtag RWBYABTV so that we can find all of your questions. Thank you so much. So, Patrick, where can the people find you?
I host a weekly gaming podcast. If you're into anime and we talk about gaming and I don't know, a bunch of other stuff, it's called Pixel by Pixel on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at P to the D's.
Okay, and Katie Cullen.
You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, and the Rooster Teeth site at Kiaxet. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. I'm also on Sword Art Online, Attack on Titan, and The Legend of Korra After Buzz panels all on Sunday.
Okay, and you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's M-A-T-T-L-I-E-B-E-R-M-A-N. You can find all my videos for SourceFed and SourceFed Nerd on YouTube. And you can find me on a bunch of other AfterBuzz TV shows, including Defiance, Under the Dome, The Strain, Ray Donovan, and Halt and Catch Fire. Thank you all so much. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV.
It's kind of a brand thing.